Sorry, Madam Chair, yes. If there are no questions on the amendment, we will, I'll call for the question.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Childers. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Kennedy?
Madam Chairman, this bill was brought forward for the hunters could use a scope with a lighted receptacles, which Fish and Game had declared illegal. Well, with talking with them and the bill introduced, they have put regulations in that you can use it, and this bill just helps clarify it now. Thank you. Any questions, sir?
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 133 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 133 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 105. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 105, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to emergency medical services regarding notification of blood-borne pathogens. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon. No, Bonner, Davison, Millen, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 105 do pass. I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 105, and we'll and as you can see, that amendment basically goes to page 2 and deletes the appropriation. It was thought that the disinfectant required on emergency medical service ambulances was sufficiently simple that it didn't require an appropriation. I would stand for questions on the amendment. If there are none, I'd call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Madam Chairman, at this point I would like to turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative and first responder from Campbell County.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill was brought to me by one of the local paramedics who lives in my district, and he asked me to bring it for your consideration. What happens on car accident scenes primarily is you go, you load the patient in the back of the ambulance, you hop in the ambulance, and you speed back to the hospital with the patient. But in about 5,000 incidents last year there were 5,100 responses to motor vehicle accidents. Out of those 5,100 responses, 3,032 of those responses had aid provided to the patient by a layperson. And what happens is you have these when you're a paramedic or an EMT, the first thing that they teach you is the scene safe? That's the first thing you're supposed to look for. The second thing you're supposed to look for is do you have your body substance isolation personal protective equipment on? Your rubber gloves, your glasses, so that you don't get exposed to bloodborne pathogens. Well, what happens with lay people is they're already exposed. They're up to their elbows in blood. And we don't notify those people of the diseases that they could take home and how to treat themselves. And so what we're doing is just asking the Department of Health to put in place a regulation that says that you have to notify those people, and if you have disinfectant, to give them disinfectant. Most people are worried about AIDS. The risk of AIDS is there, but it's slow. Hepatitis is the main concern, and taking that home to your families. We want to encourage bystanders to stop at accident scenes. We want to, with the long distances in Wyoming, but we want to take care of our bystanders. And so this paramedic asked me to bring you this bill for that reason. And with that, I'd stand for questions.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman and my good colleague from Campbell County, I guess I'm just, why is it necessary to mandate this through the Department of Health? I just, this just seems like common sense stuff that we're now mandating. When it, I would think anyone rolling up on the scene would, I know their first concern is those that are hurt, but then also making sure, I just don't know. I just don't understand why we're mandating this in this manner.
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, if it were such common sense, we'd be doing it. We're not. As our hospitals get more and more cash strapped and our emergency medical services providers get cash strapped, it becomes problematic. And this isn't a lot of money, and it isn't a lot of funds. I think the reason that it hasn't happened is because nobody is forcing it to happen, frankly. What happens is you get on scene, you're focused on the patient. It would be real easy to hand out a card that was printed by the Department of Health that says, these are the bloodborne pathogens you might have been exposed to. These are the things that you can do to take care of yourself. And if you have any questions, these are the people to contact. They haven't done that. It seems like common sense. It is common sense. But we're not doing it, and I think it's important that we at least discuss that.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So what's the penalty, or what happens if the licensed ambulance services do not have these on board?
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, it's part of the criteria for their licensure. And so just to get licensed, they have to have it on board. In terms of whether or not they lose their license as a result, that's very, very unlikely.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess my question is, yes, why are we doing this through the state? I feel that this is something that we can have done through our counties. If you go to your counties for a grant, also, there's probably other various organizations throughout the state that could probably help with this. Maybe, you know, it'd be a good project for Women's Civic League to get your Purell and help you, you know, get these supplies. But I don't know, to mandate this for the state, I don't know. I was wondering if this could be done through the county. That's my question, I guess. See if you've checked into that. Thank you.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, this is one of those issues that, you know, we should be doing this. And people should know that we should be doing this. Unfortunately, we have people in local government that are very busy people. And sometimes this isn't brought to their attention. And I think what the good representative is trying to do is bring this to somebody's attention that will then pass this down. There's an old saying, you know, in the services, things roll downhill, and I won't discuss what the thing is.
Madam Majority Whip.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I just need to follow up with my last question on the bill. So they have this on board in order to get their license, and then for some reason they respond to a call and they no longer have these on board the ambulance. Someone has helped at the scene that is just pulled up. They know about this bill. Because the ambulance does not have these on board, now have we made them liable for any disease or pathogen that this individual may have contracted?
Representative Lubnow.
To answer my good friend from Laramie County, yes, we did check, and no, we're not spending any money on it. To answer my good friend from Hot Springs County, the exposure's already happened. We're no more liable than we already are. Because if you don't advise them and somebody goes home and gets sick and infects their whole family, that's the same as advising them now. And maybe they don't get sick and don't go home and infect their whole family. You know, sometimes it's the little things we do. And you have to think in terms of a cost-benefit analysis. In one case of hepatitis that we have to pay for out of our state coffers pays for this program for the next 150 years. So that's something to keep in mind when you vote on this bill.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. You know, this is a very important issue, and I think that we need to be aware of this, and our EMTs need to be aware of this. But I ran on the service also for many years, and I believe that the local people can take care of it each of their own places, because that's one of the things we do there. And I don't think that we need a state mandate to do that, because it's already out there, and there's a lot of education there. Thank you.
Representative Peasley.
No.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Hall rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 105 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 105 has failed the Committee of the Hall. Pursuant to H.R. 105B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
No.
Childers. Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi. Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlich.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 23 ayes, 37 noes.
Thank you. Pursuant to H.R. 105B, House Bill 105, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is H.J. 009. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution Number 9, introduced by Representative Simpson, a joint resolution to encourage county officials to take a proactive approach to burgeoning wind energy resource development. This resolution was sent to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Illaway, Lubno, Miller. No, Hale, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan. Excused, Dirks. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the resolution. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that House Joint Resolution 9 do pass, and the sponsor of the bill, our good speaker, will discuss it.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you House Joint Resolution 9, and it really has no evil intent behind it. The intent of the resolution was to simply say to our counties what it says on page 2. And in the resolved language, beginning at line 12, that all Wyoming counties are encouraged to act proactively in establishing plans and regulations that address the impact of wind energy development, and that the Secretary of State of Wyoming transmit copies of this resolution to each Wyoming Board of County Commissioners. In committee, it was suggested by someone who spoke about the bill, about the resolution, and really kind of, in a way, saying, you know, be careful what you say here, because we don't want it to be a negative perception to the companies who might be developing wind energy. Well, I'm not sure that I care at this point what their perception is. What I care about now is whether or not our counties have these things square in their radar and understand the impacts that could be coming and address those as they are able to do under Title 18 of the statutes, which vests authority in the individual counties to respond to issues that arise as a result of developing wind resources. Wyoming is identified, as I understand it, as having a great deal of Class 6 and Class 7 wind, which is great wind for wind energy development. It's consistent, it's strong, and that's why it's rated so highly. I believe that we have issues with generation, wind generation, and then transmission of the power that is generated from there. I could be wrong, but it seems to me that the wind energy that is being developed in Wyoming is here because of the good wind resources and because of the proximity to the customer base and some of the transmission issues, although I know transmission is severely lacking in some areas. So really it's just a reminder or a friendly reminder to the counties from the legislature saying, please be proactive. And I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chair, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment that's been circulated, and let me start off by apologizing. The good majority floor leader laid this back twice so that I could get this out. And unfortunately, I had time to think about it, and I'd like to now withdraw that amendment. But I would. the problem with giving me too much time to think. but I would like to speak on the resolution and against the resolution. And I certainly understand that no ill intent was meant by this resolution. But I think there could be a bad result as a result of this resolution. And that's because what the resolution basically says to the counties is we are going to have significant wind development, and you better look out and you better take care of it. And we have not had a significant amount of discussion on this floor about what we in this body have to do to prepare for the coming really flood of wind development in this state. What we have seen to date is likely a shadow of what is to come, and we are not ready for it. Not in a regulatory manner, and probably not in a tax manner. Not in many manners are we ready for the coming flood of development. And if we look at how wind is regulated now, you have to understand that those utilities that are building wind farms are coming under PSC control, and they have to meet certain PSC requirements, including tower retirement requirements that other independent wind farmers don't have to meet. There are some wind developers that are developing on a scope that they come under Industrial Siting Council jurisdiction that the counties really can't stick their finger into and don't have the power to stick their finger into. And yet we also have wind developers that are scaling under that threshold for Industrial Siting Council permitting that sort of escape those requirements. And so what we have right now in our state is a patchwork that never contemplated utility-grade wind development that catches some, misses some, and treats some differently. And when you tell the counties take care of it, develop your own wind regulations, you're going to basically superimpose a whole nother grid on top of the patchwork we already have. You're going to have different counties with different regulations. Some of those regulations that are in place right now are duplicative, maybe slightly different than Industrial Siting Council requirements, and so you have double reporting, sometimes different. I mean, it's in that respect, it's bad for the wind companies as well, because then they don't have one single comprehensive manner in which to go through and get permitted. And so the real danger of this resolution is to say we as a state, you know, we don't really have responsibility. This is a local responsibility. Take care of it. And it sends a signal that we aren't going to do anything about it. And I think we need to examine this issue. And what this resolution succeeds in doing is steering us away from the examination and try to put the responsibility on somebody else. And so I would urge you to think very seriously about the impacts of the resolution and to vote against it.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would first like to applaud the speaker for recognizing this as an important issue. I'm sure a lot of us have heard from our local county commissioners that the wind is here and there are impacts, and what do we do with it, and how does the tax structure work, and how do we mitigate those impacts? So I would submit to you that the intent of this is very timely, although I would definitely argue that this is a statewide issue and we need to look at this more comprehensively as it relates to industrial siting, as it relates once again to the tax and the compensation for counties as they may feel the impacts. If you review the section 18-2-101, which the resolution references, basically is the general powers description for the counties, and it's slightly conflicting with the intent of the title of the resolution that we want to help grow and foster the wind energy resources. The powers that are granted to the county, as they're outlined in that statute, mention the words declare and abate nuisances. And for some of you wind power may be a declaration of a nuisance, and you may want to try to abate it. So there's a little bit of conflicting interest. You know, as we look at multi-thousand megawatt wind farms, they don't always fit in one county or another county. As we're learning, these things are multi-county. The infrastructure is not usually from one county, it's multi-county. I think there's a solution we can discuss in this body, be proactive as a body, and I hope we can come to the consensus that this is an important enough issue to attack it as a statewide industrial siting and a public commission issue. So I would be speaking against this resolution.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know what the rules are for this, but it would be interesting if on line one, instead of saying a joint resolution to encourage county officials, it said state officials or elected legislative officials. I think that this requires a state approach. It's very interesting. Years ago, and Wyoming still has it, it's a meet of champs for TRAC, and now it meets in Casper, but it used to meet in Worland for the young women of the state. And there was an outstanding young sprinter from Cheyenne, who was in our county of Washakie, in our town of Worland, and she was warming up, and suddenly she stopped, and she looked around, and she said, "This is so odd." And people said, "What's up?" And she said, "I have never run when there isn't wind." I live in the part of the Bighorn Basin, along with two other counties, Hot Springs and Bighorn, that we really don't have wind. And that's what makes this resolution kind of odd. Everybody keeps saying we live in a windy state and fly from the windy city. And in fact, we don't have wind. You have a little bit in the spring when you can fly a few kites, but that, I hate knock on wood, I don't want to invite it. But in fact, this is a statewide issue. I don't know what my county officials would do with this. Are they supposed to help Park County, who does have wind? And I know because of soccer season, they have a lot of wind. I think it's a well-intended resolution, but I really and truly do not know what my county officials would do with it, because it's never going to be an industry in my county. We don't have sufficient wind.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the concern that has brought this proposal forward. But I have never known this body to encourage regulation. And the risk here is of over-regulation, as the good representative from Natrona County mentioned. The horse is out of the barn on county regulation. Platt, Albany, Platt and Laramie County have regulations in place. Natrona County has emergency wind regulations in place. Albany County is in the draft wind regulation process. Carbon is going to start drafting regulations. And in addition, the wind projects that have been are under development in Carbon and Albany County have gone through the county zoning process and are subject to restrictions already from the counties. The counties are well aware of the need. I also want to just add a little bit on the industrial siting process. I've participated in the industrial siting process for three large wind projects in the last 4 months. And I, for the speaker's benefit, I brought a copy of a recent application for industrial siting. And for those of you who aren't looking, which is fine, don't all turn around, the industrial siting application is this thick. It contains wildlife monitoring, it contains socioeconomic impacts, it contains environmental impacts, it contains revenue impacts. It's an expensive, time-consuming, comprehensive process. And when the Industrial Siting Act was passed in 1977, again in a situation not unsimilar to what we have now to deal with large power plant construction, which was not something we had a lot of back then, and I am old enough to remember. The Industrial Siting Act was intended to be one-stop permitting. It was intended to be comprehensive. We don't want to subject any industry in the state wind, oil and gas, or anything else to dual, potentially conflicting regulation. And we don't need to send the message to the counties that the state's not paying attention, because if a facility is subject to industrial siting and the threshold is $178 million, they go through a lot. If the facility happens to be on federal land, they have to do a NEPA analysis. In addition, if part of it's on state land, they have to negotiate an agreement with the state. And certainly private land, they have to negotiate an agreement with the private landowner. At the federal level, just to give you an example, the FAA regulates the color of the blades for safety reasons, and you have to get FAA review, and it's not really a permit, but there's an FAA process that has to approve your turbines so they know that they're not going to cause interference with planes. Well, I have seen draft county regulations and some final county regulations talking about the color of the blades. The FAA covers that. There are multi-layered regulations in place for wind now, and the counties already regulate through their zoning process, which brings actually up another important point. If the resolution does go forward, it should reference county zoning powers, not the county general powers. That's a very, very important for clarity reasons, because counties don't have any general powers. They don't have any powers that we don't give to them. And by referencing general powers, it's really that they regulate wind through zoning. So I would just propose, or will propose, an amendment to address that issue. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I find this a rather stimulating debate. We have sent resolution after resolution to Washington and to various other places, and resolutions are a suggestion that we make. And usually they're ignored. And I believe the speaker is trying to send information to the counties and saying, please be aware that this train is coming. And some counties have already experienced it. With reference to the Siting Act, any of you that have been around as long as I happen to be in local government, when Rock Springs, and we didn't have the siting power, the Siting Act, was devastated by the Jim Bridger, I believe it is, plant, and the things that were going on, and that's where all of these things came about. They came about to protect counties and protect cities from these impacts that I'm sitting here listening to. As I came up here to just kind of talk about, I think it was nice that he encouraged them and mentioned one other thing, that we've done some things here in this body already. We've started to allow the counties to eliminate the sales tax breaks, because the counties need that money. One thing you don't realize is that all these transmission lines that flow across these counties generate huge amounts of tax revenue for county government. That's one of their pipelines, and electrical transmission lines are one of their major sources of revenue. And we get a lot of money from them too, by the way. They're taxed as regular property taxes, with maybe even a little higher than some of the regular property taxes. I don't know. I'm talking out of turn there. I shouldn't be saying the rates there. Counties, it was good. The gentlelady from Laramie County referenced counties have no general powers. They have the powers that we give them, and one of the powers that we give them is the powers with the zoning. And the zoning is how they maybe can control some of these things. And I'm not too sure, but we're not getting carried away here a little bit with a resolution that is a suggestion to counties that they need to be aware of this. It says here, and I'll read it again, that all Wyoming counties are encouraged to act proactively in establishing plans and regulations to address the impact of wind energy development. When it hit us, a state who has the regulatory powers and who has some of these things, we were caught a little behind the eight ball. We weren't quite prepared, and we're scrambling to deal with some of these things. I think this is something that we're not starting to say to the counties, where you're not doing your job. We're saying, look ahead. This may come to your house. There may be a ring at your doorbell. Be prepared. On and for the amendment, without all bunch of amendments. I mean, the resolution.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to speak a little bit about Natrona County, and it's got wind projects that are called Little Ones and Big Ones, and they do have county zoning very much involved in that process, and it's a collaborative effort. I've attended at least one of those meetings that dealt with the residential windmills, and it was handled very, very professionally by the county. So anyway, I thought that went well, and then I followed the other zoning issues and contact with the citizens of Natrona County through the planning process in the big projects, and they seem to be adequately covered now. So what I'm saying is I'm not sure this resolution is needed to get the job done that is being done, at least in a county that I'm familiar with.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess we have to look at this resolution for what it doesn't say. It doesn't say the Wyoming State Legislature cedes jurisdiction over regulation of wind power to the counties. What it does say is that wind power is coming, and it's coming in a way that you may not anticipate. And you need to plan for it. So get ready. Because you now have the opportunity to be proactive. And we've had lots of places in this state who have come to this body, including my community, saying, we didn't anticipate the growth, we need your help, and we need it in a big way. This is the opportunity to think ahead, because counties have zoning, and we think in terms of regulation and the zoning powers, but there's other things that a county needs to think about with respect to impacts of large projects coming into the community. Utilities, training the first responders on how to respond to facilities like this. What kind of medical care needs are you going to need? What types of infrastructure needs are you going to need and plan ahead for it? And then, of course, zoning. This isn't the political ole where we send the issue to the counties. What this is a warning to our counties that they need to start getting on board and thinking about things. We need to be on board, and we have a lot of issues that we need to think about in this body, too. And those issues will properly come before this body, and we'll talk about them. But we need to work with our partner counties. I've heard many times on this floor that the government closest to the people governs best. And this is just a statement of that, saying you, governments closest to the people, need to get ready to govern best.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wind power and me are just not real happy characters right now. In our county, we got a wind farm. And we did go through the process of the county held some hearings, and we thought everything would just kind of go through, and being kind of a laid-back county, we didn't show up. And the folks that put the wind farm in, I would say, were not very professional, did some things that I just think were not good at all. The placement of the towers, as you know, we live here in a nice place and the sunsets are great. And as the sun goes down in the west, you just like to see those gorgeous sunsets. But we have 12 blinking lights in our sunset. They're red, they're pretty, I guess, but they kind of detract from what's there. The road deterioration that took place because of this, the company we had just was not a good partner. And I think this idea that we're talking about is very needed. I would really have appreciated, and I think our county commissioner would have, some guidelines, just some suggestions of what might we ask of this wind farm as they go in. And had they had it to do over again, we wouldn't see 12 blinking lights in our sunset. I think they just kind of bulldozed their way through and didn't really, the projected revenues, I mean, they just said a lot of things that didn't quite come to pass. So I guess I'm just looking for some help for counties. As this resolution says, the counties, please get a little bit proactive. Well, our county kind of missed the boat, and if we'd have had some guidelines that the state could have helped us with, I think it really would have been help, a big help to Uinta County. So I think this says something good, but I'd like to say, get it to say a little more with maybe another bill or something to help out and statewide help our counties. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Okay, question being called.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, it's been suggested that we need a statewide approach, and I can't wait for that debate, considering what we've debated about a local kind of approach here. A statewide approach. Think about what we do with zoning and land use planning. We first adopt the regulations in 1978 that say it's the responsibility of the counties to do land use planning and zoning. And really that's what this is talking about is the siting of these towers. It was suggested that we could limit it to zoning and cite a different part of the statute. We could cite 18.5102, 18.5101, which is the section on zoning. But we allow counties to do their land use planning and update them as often as they want to, according to the state statute. We allow them to adopt zoning and to set zones and to regulate those zones. And we allow subdivision regulation. Sometimes we try and fix things on a state level so things are more equitable and try and address particular issues when it comes to lot sizes or what or subdivisions and DEQ and those types of things. I think we do need a unified approach to this. Does it need to be a statewide approach? I don't know. It's a confusing issue that I bet not many of us on this floor know very much about. And I don't know nearly enough about it in terms of wind power development and how it relates to a regulated utility under the Public Services Commission. But I think I know that you just can't put a utility anywhere. There have to be some local input to that and some requirements. How many utilities do we have that stand 200 feet in the air? We have radio towers. We have Bureau of Reclamation electric towers in Park County that are 200 feet high and that go to the Buffalo Bill Dam. But most of the utilities that we think of in terms of the PSC are electric things that are in the ground, I'd say. These things aren't in the ground. These things are in your view, and to me, that's a local issue as to where they should be sited. The Bureau of Reclamation, or the BLM, has been doing some of their plan updating and showing wind maps in Park County and how those apply to different areas on the BLM, and where they could potentially develop on BLM land. On the top of Rattlesnake Mountain in Cody, do you think anybody there thinks that's a good place to locate wind towers? I don't think that. There are great places to site them, and there are places where they probably shouldn't be sited. As I read the resolution, I see four words that seem objectionable at all, and that's page 2, line 13, establishing plans and regulations. Everything else in this, we probably would all say, yeah, that's a good idea. That's right. But when we say to our counties, established plans and regulations, the one response is, no, let us do it on a statewide basis. Is that what we're saying to them? That's not what I'm saying to them. I'm saying to them, do it locally. Do what you can under your authority under Title 18. We certainly may have to do some things, but do we have anything that addresses setbacks to subdivisions? Do we have anything that addresses impacts to roads? Do we have things that adequately impact or address derelict towers, companies that are bankrupt? I'm told that the PSC builds that into their rate base. On other lands, and then with the private landowner, it's up to the private landowner to negotiate that into their agreement. Would every landowner know to negotiate that into their agreement? That somebody ought to take care of this thing if the company goes bankrupt and no one buys the tower or takes care of it? That's something that the county commissioners ought to decide. In the committee, the director of the organization that represents our counties said, we have a committee formed to study these issues and look at them so we can develop some uniform and consistent approach. I suggested to the committee that at page 2, line 13, after the word proactively, they insert with the words, with the Wyoming County Commissioners Association. I had to leave the committee, and apparently that didn't happen, but I suggested that because it was said that there was this unified approach going on. I don't want to create 23 different sets of plans and regulations. And I don't think we've done that with subdivisions either. Each town, each county has their own peculiarities with zoning, and that's fine. But do people stand up on this floor and say, we've got to have a statewide approach because the plans and regulations that the counties adopt are going to inhibit development? I don't hear that. All this is saying is take a proactive approach. Let's pass it to second reading. If the words establishing plans and regulations are really that much of a problem, we can wordsmith that. We can also address Title 18. But those are the only things that I can see in there that cause a problem. And I think you really have to consider, what are we saying when we say that the things that were said about what's coming, what we see now is a shadow of things to come. We're not ready for it. There's going to be a flood of development. Well, let's share that with the county commissioners and tell them from a legislative perspective that that's what we believe. And so be proactive about it. The counties have attorneys who are going to say to them, there are PSC rules. There's the Industrial Siting Act that applies to projects over $178 million, which, what are these things, $3 million a piece? $178 million is a lot of them for the Industrial Siting Act to even apply. If you're putting up 10, you're at $30 million. What applies to that? The PSC? What if it's on private land? There are lots of issues out there. The absence of statewide regulation does not justify us not expressing an intent to the counties or our desire that they be proactive. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Eloise. Motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so at the recommendation that Bill number HJ009 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
HJ009 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd move House Bill 31 to the bottom of your list.
And Mr. Minority Floor Whip, would you please take the chair?
Moving right along. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 53. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 53, introduced by Representative Millen, an act relating to fair employment practices. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 53 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, and I move the standing committee amendment at this time. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I am not going to explain the standing committee amendment. I will wait until after the explanation of the bill, and I turn the floor over to the good representative from House District Unknown in Cheyenne.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Chairman Landon. That's House District 8. Well, I bring before you House Bill 53 today, and this was actually brought to our committee, and I jumped on to take it. And what this bill is going to do is add retaliation to our labor standards. Right now, if you look at the discriminatory and unfair employment practices, currently under statute 279105, it provides that an employer, employment agency, or labor organization may not discriminate against individuals based on age, sex, race, creed, color, national origins, ancestry, or pregnancy. The current law does not specifically protect people from retaliation, which this bill would do. The Department of Employment Labor Standards Program has a contract with the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, which is the EEOC, to investigate charges of employment discrimination, which are jurisdictional under both state and federal law. The Labor Standards Program currently investigates charges that include retaliation as a basis of discrimination. Under federal law, the EEOC has retaliation protection for individuals who either file a charge or participate in any proceedings under federal employment statutes. Retaliation cases filed with the labor standard programs have been increasing. In Wyoming, of the 168 discrimination cases filed, 183 cases are retaliation cases. If it is decided that the state lacks jurisdiction concerning retaliation cases, the contract with the EEOC would be jeopardized, which would result in a contract loss of over $45,000. The Labor Standard Program receives funding from the EEOC to investigate employment discrimination charges. If it is determined that the Labor Standard Program lacks jurisdiction on this issue, the case must be deferred to the EEOC for investigation, and the agency would lose federal funding of $180,000. The agency relies on witnesses in many cases to determine if discrimination took place. If the statutory provisions are not amended to include retaliation, then many witnesses will refuse to cooperate in investigations for fear of reprisal from their employer. So in summary, what this bill does, one, charges which allege retaliation are increasing. Two, if the state lacks jurisdiction to investigate these charges, the funding from the EEOC will be compromised. And three, if the state cannot provide some type of protection for our witnesses, then they will not participate in investigations. I stand for questions. I feel this is a necessary statute to add, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as you have just heard, currently it's an unfair employment practice for an employer to discharge or demote or to discriminate in compensation or conditions or privilege of employment and so on against a disabled person or a person because of age, sex, race, and so on. So that's current law. And then what is being added is to discriminate against a person who has opposed any of these practices that I just mentioned that are unlawful, or who made a charge that one of these things were unlawful, or testified on behalf of another employee that these things were unlawful in an investigation or in a proceeding or in a hearing. So what the amendment wanted to ensure was that an employee who would stand for another employee who was alleging discrimination did so in good faith. And so that is why that the committee looked at the amendment and recognized and passed the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on page 2 after line 10. It inserted that they testified or made this charge or assisted or participated in good faith in these investigations and proceedings and hearings. That is the amendment. That's the proposal.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment 1. Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to divide the amendment between lines 4 and 5, with the first division being lines 1 through 4 and the second division being 5 through 11.
Chair rules that the division Patty. The chair rules that the amendment is divisible, and we will begin with Division 1.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, friends, I have to tell you that we're stretching me procedurally about as far as I can go today between being in the chair and then dividing an amendment. let me also tell you the genesis of my being here. This bill was heard in committee the very first week, and as a new freshman, I thought I'd go to a committee that wasn't my own, where I thought that I would have a bill heard. And until today, it was going to be heard in the Labor Committee. And what happened, I thought, during that meeting was I got myself involved in a bit of a sticky wicket. And that sticky wicket being that the language good faith was added, I believe, very much in good faith. And I'm a very, very big fan that all people at all times should be behaving in good faith. And that's how this language was added. But right after that language was added, the Department of Employee Personnel, who would be administering this bill, stood up and said, "Oh, hang on. We're concerned about the addition of the good faith language. We gave you the language that's being used all over the country that the EEOC is mandating that get added to our fair employment standards." They then went back. They called the EEOC National Office to ask if the good faith language would in fact jeopardize the language that were, or this, the addition to our fair employment law, and the answer is yes. And that memo was distributed last week, and basically what they said is that the addition of that language could in fact negate everything that the good representative from Laramie County talked about in terms of Wyoming continuing to get federal money for investigating retaliation claims. But there's a good reason for it, in all honesty. And again, as the law gets somewhat very complicated, that the addition of the good faith language, as we see it, if the amendment was to pass, you'll see that it was added on page 2, line 10, and on line 21. But in fact, this simple little clause is actually two clauses. And the first part of it is called the opposition clause. The second part is called the participation clause. The good faith language is only being added in the participation clause. And so it, in fact, doesn't even do what the bringer of the amendment had hoped that it would do. because basically the good faith language is only being added to that portion of the additional language that goes to those co-workers who did participate with the investigating officer. So in all honesty, the good faith language isn't doing what it was expected to do. And then finally, as you saw in that memo, the rules and regulations that are promulgated by the feds in terms of investigating these claims says that actors must be in good faith so that we can be assured that in any investigation, good faith standards have to be followed. So I would vote, I would encourage you to vote against the Standing Committee Amendment Division 1 and for the Standing Committee Amendment Division 2. Thank you.
We are on Division 1. Representative Hellinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason those of us who voted for this amendment think it's necessary is that an employer would have really no grounds to fire anybody, as the way I read this, and I have some difference of opinion on how this fits in with the grammatical location of that little phrase in good faith. But the employer, if a person made a claim that's protected under this provision, which is, you know, we're all in favor of that, but if they fired somebody and this person made a claim not in good faith but harassing, then the employer would have no grounds to defend himself or herself. So that's why we thought that this good faith little phrase was necessary. So I think the difficulty for employers, I think, would be increased way above the requirements that we have on us now. So all of us are in favor, I think, of opposition to the issues that we're talking about here. But at the same time, we don't want to give somebody a free ride to become a disruptive employee in that office. Speaking from my own experience as a physician, sometimes we have a medical staff member who has to be disciplined. And they just continually complain about this and this and this. And at a certain point, they become a disruptive physician. And they have to be disciplined for that. But this, by allowing people to make these accusations not in good faith and having the protection of the law in doing so, we make it impossible to discipline that person or to have them stop that behavior. So I believe that's the reasons that I favor this phrase, and I believe that's what the committee felt, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If, as the good representative from District 32 just spoke about, the situation that he just spoke about honestly would fit in what's called the opposition portion of this clause, and the good faith language would need to be added at the end of line 8, for example. So it would have followed a person for having opposed any employment practice made in good faith. That's where the good faith language would have needed to have appeared. But instead, it's appearing in line 10 after the participated language. And so this does get to be a technicality, and I would suggest to the representative from District 32 that if in fact wanted to make that argument, it should be made on a second reading amendment and put in line 8 and then the other one in line whatever 20 it is. But the reality is nothing in fair employment law says that an employer ever need hire or continue to keep employed a bad employee. There's nothing in fair employment law that ever says that someone who is not doing their job, who is disruptive, who is causing a company to lose money rather than to gain money, should remain on the payroll. And there was no testimony or evidence in the committee hearing that I heard that our Fair Employment Office is overzealous. In fact, what we hear is that there are an enormous number of complaints that get made, and that our Fair Employment Office, in all honesty, fines for only a tiny, tiny number of them. And in fact, most of those complaints are found to be unfounded and need to go away. Also, the good faith language does exist in the rules and regulations that have been promulgated and need to be followed by our Fair Employment Office.
We are on Division 1. Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would say that actually the language was in the correct place, because if you took it up two lines and made it behind made, or I say you're taking it up to line 9 and putting and suggesting behind made there.
Additional discussion. Representative Connolly.
All right. Mr. Chair, Chairman, the representative from District 30, it would need to exist in both places, because there are two distinct clauses that the courts are looking at in terms of this language. The first is called the opposition clause. The second is called the participation clause. The opposition clause begins on line 9, right after the word or, goes down to line 9, where you see the second or. That first part is called the opposition clause, and that's the clause that goes to the individual who has made the complaint, right? All right, so the person who actually has opposed an employer, all right, the employer is prohibited from retaliating against that person for having opposed a practice. The second clause after that or on page 9 is what's called the participation clause. And that clause does go to that individual, but it goes more towards those people who help or in some way respond to an investigating officer who is looking into the claim. So the coworkers, and they're considered participants. And to back up a little bit, this retaliation language came about because of a case where a big box store ended up firing all those employees who participated in a claim against it. They weren't the people who were arguing that the big box company was discriminating against them, but they're the people who answered the questions, all right, from the Fair Employment Officer who came to the floor and said, "What's going on?" All right, the company eventually fired those people. That's the participation clause, and that's where the good faith language right now exists, is only in that clause.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the good representative from House 32 was saying, you know, that we all agreed on this in committee, this amendment was brought up by him, and at the time I was presenting the bill with someone from the Department of Employment, we thought this was friendly language. So we went ahead and voted on it, and then afterwards the department then was able to call their and hear from the Federal Department of Employment and then we found out that this language should not be added in this section. So that's why I am speaking against and would vote against Division 1 to that amendment and for Division 2. Thanks.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it seems to me that we do need to add then in another place in good faith. Because we have the person who's potentially discriminated or retaliated against, who's opposed the employment practice, and they should have done that in good faith. And then we have another group of people that have possibly testified, assisted, or participated in the investigation, and they too should have been held to that standard.
Representative Connolly.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. And let me just read you the rules and regulations that our Department of Employment need follow with investigating these claims. The courts hearing these cases have set a standard that must be followed and met when asserting a charge of discrimination. That standard includes an initial prima facie framework, which requires an individual alleging retaliatory conduct on the part of their employer to show, one, that the employee engaged in protected opposition to Title VII prohibited discrimination, and as much as the charging party protested what he or she in good faith believed to be an unlawful employment practice or participated in a Title VII proceeding. So that language exists, and it exists for both clauses in the rules and regulations that need be followed.
Majority Whip Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Minority Whip. I guess at this point, I am on and in favor of Division One, based on the testimony that we've heard here today, or the comments that we've heard here today, because it would appear that Division One, it is appropriate, and then it would occur to me that we probably need to bring back a second reading amendment to put in good faith up in the opposition part of this bill also. So I stand in favor of Division One.
We are voting on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 1, Lines 1 through 5. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to point out, if you don't put in the words good faith, then you condone bad faith. So read it that way. Read this and see what it says. And I'm sorry, but rules and regulations don't have the force of law. It would say it's discriminatory or unfair employment practice for an employer to discriminate against a person for having made a charge, testified, assisted, or participated in any manner in bad faith in an investigation, proceeding, or hearing under this act. I can't live with that. On and for the amendment.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two responses to my good colleague from Albany County. The Department of Employment began its memo to us by saying the primary concern in including in good faith language in the addition of a retaliation provision into the Wyoming Fair Employment Act is the potential jeopardy in which it places the federal funding. Right, so that's number one. But second, I read the entire fair employment statute just to see where good faith language is used. Because if it is used throughout the fair employment statute, I'd say fine. Of course it makes sense. Of course it makes sense. We all want employers and employees to act in good faith. So I looked in the statute for any use of that term, or that phrase. It's not used any place in our fair employment statute. So when it's used in one particular clause, it becomes very meaningful. And I would disagree with my colleague from Albany County that it implies bad faith. It implies the same standard that, in my mind, it implies the same standard that's used in evaluating each and every other claim under our unfair employment statute. And those claims are, in fact, evaluated using the rules and regulations that are put forth by the EEOC, which says that all of the parties must act in good faith.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When somebody is withholding money from me because I don't want to have or because I want to have good faith in the statutes saying you must act in good faith to do something or I'm not going to give you money, that makes me pretty suspect of their motives. If the reason we're doing this is a jeopardy of $46,000 in federal funds, I don't want the money because people can use these statutes, disgruntled employees, the kind of people that get fired, as a sword. And we have an obligation to all of the employers in the state that if we're going to do this, and I think that there's parts of this statute that maybe we should do, and there's parts when we get back on the bill that I'd like to talk about, but if we're going to allow a cause of action or we're going to require permission from the state of Wyoming before we can terminate somebody, We better do it in a way that's in good faith, and we have an obligation to employers to do that. So I'm on and for the amendment.
We are voting on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 1, Lines 1 through 5. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 1, Lines 1 through 5, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The ayes have it.
Division
being called. All those in favor of the motion, please stand. All those opposed, no. Please stand. The ayes have it. We are now on Division 2. Question on Division 2. All those in favor of Division 2, please. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The Standing Committee Amendment, Division 1, has been adopted. And also Standing Committee Number 2 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Are you ready? Representative Lebna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about language. If you look at page 2, line 9, 10, and 11, I think I understand. Having made a charge, testified, or assisted, or participated in any manner in an investigation, proceeding, hearing under this act. I know what that is. I can see it. I can touch it. I know somebody did something because they had an overt act. And if I have to go to court, I can prove that. I don't know what the language for having opposed an employment practice made unlawful under this section means, and was wondering if the proponents of the bill could explain to me what that is, why it's there, why it's necessary, and how you would go about proving that.
Are you ready for the question? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know what that means either. That was it was our understanding that that was language directly out of federal language that we needed to put in state statute. As I stand here before you, I wish we would have examined that a lot closer, and I think that'll be a lesson to us to do so in the future. But I cannot provide an answer to that question, and I stand here humbly and say that.
We are on House Bill 53. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the answer to the previous questions is that this is the clause within the retaliation standard that says that an individual who's been discriminated against because of race or sex or age, for example, who brings forth a claim, and in all honesty brings forth a claim in good faith, can't be terminated or punished by his or her employee. So this is the opposition clause to the retaliation language. It's for the actual individual who has done that opposition.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I actually think that we might be dealing with a typo here, that very well could have said that any person for having imposed any employment practice made unlawful. I'm going to guess at that language, because that opposed seems to be a very curious word indeed. Thank you.
I would say that a guess is probably a second reading amendment.
Representative Miller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this language is brought to us by the Department of Employment, and yeah, I should have looked specifically to make sure what the federal law said, and we will check into that. But I do ask for your support on passing this legislation. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that bill, that House Bill number 53 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to H.R. 10-5 Bill B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy. Carson. Carson. Childers. Childers. Cohey. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Edmonds. Esquivel. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hales. Hallinan. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Illaway. Yagi. Jorgensen. Landon. Lockhart. Lubno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Miller. Millen. Moniz. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen. Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Mr. Speaker, no.
No.
Carson. Carson?
Carson excused.
Carson excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 25 ayes, 34 noes, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rules 10-5B, House Bill 53, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Representative Connolly.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Having heard the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries. Committee announcements? Nope, sorry. I take that back. Thank you.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 141, amended. Recommended do pass. Representative Buchanan moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. House Bill 74, recommended do pass. House Bill 78, recommended do pass. House Bill 145. Amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 44. Recommended do pass. House Bill 133, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 105, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Joint Resolution Number 9, recommended do pass. House Bill 53, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed, Representative Connolly, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Thank you, Representative Connolly. Messages from the Senate.
Message 148. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on a third reading by an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 31, Brucellosis Surveillance Program. Ayes 29, noes 1, signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 149, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program Administration. Ayes 21, noes 9, signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 150. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 68, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Ayes 30, no, 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 151. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 113, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool. Ayes 30, no, 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 152, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 124, Education Reserve Funding. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 153, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 125, State Employee Compensation. Ayes 30, noes 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 154. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Discretionary Clause Prohibition Act. Ayes 26, noes 4. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 155. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 75, Economic Development Account. Ayes 25, noes 5. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees. No. Oh, excuse me.
There's one
not
more.
Quite
sorry.
Done.
Message 156. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 84, Aggravated Assault Choking. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 33, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Pedersen, Philp, Stewart, no, Harshman, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 68, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 87, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 134, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart, conflict, Hammonds, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 180, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart, signed, Representing Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 6, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, signed, Representing Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 225, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 96, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 162, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Gilmore, McKim, Zwanitzer, Dave. No, Cohey, Hallinan, Madden, Peterson. Signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 183, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Gilmore, Hallinan, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave. No, Cohey, Madden. Signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 195, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Chairman Illaway.
Are you ready for committee
report? Are there any re-referrals? Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully request that House Bill 96 and House Bill 162 be re-referred from Committee Number 8 to Committee Number 2, as they both have appropriations.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Any other re-referrals? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr.
Committee announcements, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet at noon on Thursday tomorrow. In House 18, we will discuss the continuation of House Bill 168, Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility, House Bill 187, Early Detection Smoke Alarms, House Bill 188, Insurance Coverage of PK, and House Bill 250, Classification of Fire Chiefs After End of Term.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Thursday at 8 a.m., room 204, to hear House Bill 130, State Parks Matching Account, House Bill 3, Coroners, House Bill 252, Wyoming Retirement System, Hospital Participation, House Bill 54, Workers' Compensation Amendments. And then upon noon recess, we will hear referred bills, House Bill 114, Community College Amendments, House Bill 146, Emergency Medical Service Sustainability Trust,
House Bill 152, Athletic Trainers Licensing, and House Bill 163, Physician Assistance. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Friday morning at 8 o'clock in H18 to consider House Bill 71, Film Industry Financial Incentives, House Bill 239, Bighorn Basin Discovery Center, and House Bill 169, Mortgage Originators. Privilege of the floor, Mr.
Please,
Speaker.
Please proceed.
A reminder that there is a legislative prayer breakfast, that very cleverly designed handout that's on your desk, tells the time and place. It's a formal document, but Dandy Bruin is a pastor and has been very good in the past. And then last but not least, I think the camel hair and camel-colored dress showed up very well today, and we're over the hump.
Chairman Coey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8 on Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs will meet tomorrow, January 29th, upon adjournment in room H-17 to discuss House Bill 220, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees, House Bill 242, Off-Road Vehicle Definition, House Bill 132, Vehicle Registration Fees, House Joint Resolution 2, Adequate Funding for I-80 as a Critical Freight Route, and House Bill 230, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax 2.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet 10 minutes from now at 4:15 to finish working and hearing public testimony on House Bill 116, Recording of Custodial Interrogations, and to work House Bill 237, Name Changes Sealed, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in H8. Judiciary will take up the following bills: House Bill 222, Establishment of Private Roads; House Bill 229, Court Security Reimbursement; House Bill 261, Mandatory Savings Accounts for Inmates; House Bill 274, Underage Drinking; and then upon adjournment, we will take up House Bill 18, Voting Rights, and we will do that in room 302 so we can watch the video that the sponsor wishes to show.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Committee number 4, Education, will meet at 4:15 tonight in room H10, where we will take up House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program; House Bill 174, Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarship; House Bill 223, Bullying Prevention; and House Bill 269, School Finance At-Risk Funding.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet this afternoon at 4:15 in H-17 to hear House Bill 41, Cremation Expenses; House Bill 42, Burial Arrangements; and House Bill 120, Assisted Suicide.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment this afternoon at 4:15 to hear House Bill 213, Rangeland Monitoring; House Bill 75, Subdivisions Water Supply Study; House Bill 99, Veterinary Loan Repayment Program; House Bill 166, Pregnancy Testing Cattle; House Bill 198, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessments; House Bill 206, Care of Animals After Domestic Violence; and House Bill 193. And, Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5 will also be meeting tomorrow morning, Thursday, January 29th at 7 a.m. to hear House Bill 194, Wyoming Healthy Food Initiative Act; House Bill 176, B X-ray Equipment Appropriation; House Bill 129, Agricultural Innovations; and House Joint Resolution 8, Equine Resources. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Chairman Coey. Sure.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 12 on Rules and Procedures will meet tomorrow morning, January 29th at 8 a.m. in room 302 to discuss House Bill 61, the Revisers Bill; House Bill 127, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions; and House Bill 160, Constituent Service Allowance.
Thank you, Chairman Coey. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, you have on your desks the schedule for general file tomorrow. Just so you know, the intent is to start at the top of the list, obviously, in the morning and get through what we can before lunch, and then take up House Bill 31 at 2 o'clock and get that one out of the way. And with that, I would move that we adjourn until Thursday, January 29th, 2009. Let's make it, what do you say, 10 a.m.?
No! You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The House is adjourned until Thursday morning, January 29th at 10 a.m.